It'll lighten the mood a little bit. This guy's always in a good mood. I just got cranky over this Acuna Ureña stuff. Lighten the mood, lots of smiles. Our good buddy, Adnan Virk of ESPN. Celebrating the 75th birthday of Bobby De Niro. What's up, pal?
Scott, I always try to bring a little bit of levity to the room. Good to talk to you and to Dave. And yes, Bob De Niro. Listen, in a lifetime of career achievements, the fact I can say I once interviewed Bobby D for 15 minutes on my podcast Cinephile, career highlight, I can never top it. I want to have a De Niro marathon right now.
Is there a story you can tell us about your interaction with Robert that stands out to you that maybe occurred once the microphones were off, or was he just sit down, get it done, get out?
No, I've got a tremendous story, Scott. I'll give you the backstory. I'll do it as quick as I can. I know I talk fast, but I'll talk even faster. I'm at the Little League World Series, which is where I'm actually headed to tomorrow in Williamsport, and I get the email from the ESPN producer saying Robert De Niro is coming to ESPN. So, oh, my goodness. So I finagle away literally with my wife and my kids. At the time, we had two boys. Now we have three. She was pregnant with number three. We left Williamsport at like 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, drove 5 hours back to Central Connecticut, slept about 3 hours, so I'm way too excited. In the morning, babysitter didn't show, almost had to take the kids with me. My wife loves De Niro as much as I do. Drop the kids off, the neighbors, we go into the studio. As soon as he turns the corner, it almost felt like a surprise party. It was like, no, get down, hide, here he comes. As soon as he walked in the room, you think about somebody that you admire, a living legend, and he immediately puts you at ease. He had a big smile on his face. The first thought I had was that he's avuncular. Considering that he is the raging bull and has played so many tough guys, he seemed like a really sweet uncle or grandfather. The interview goes, and it was excellent. I encourage people to listen to it. I asked him a lot because I adore Scorsese. So I mainly focused on Mean Streets and Taxi Driver and Raging Bull. And Bob's memory was pretty good. A couple times he kind of trailed off here, and then I think he kind of felt bad. I was like, no, listen, man, you're in your 70s. These stories, I'm asking about movies from the 70s, for God's sakes. The mic goes off. He couldn't have been more nice, by the way. And I think he knew I was strange because I had a Travis Bickle figurine there. I was showing him pictures that I have. I was wearing a Tribeca shirt, which is, of course, Robert De Niro's film festival. So he knew I was already a psycho. But as soon as the mic went off, he just turns to me and says, Pakistan? And I said, yeah, because in the question I said to him about Taxi Driver, I said, listen, at the time I was 36 or 37. I'm a 37-year-old Pakistani Canadian, and yet I identify with this film about a New York cab driver set in a film made before I was made. So for some reason, that stuck out to him. And he goes, Pakistan? I said, yeah, that's where my parents are from. Yeah, I'm born and raised in Canada. And he said, and he kind of started mumbling. And I think at this point, Scott, it kind of hit me that I'm talking to Robert De Niro. Like, I was pretty good in the interview. And at this point, I started turning into a fanboy, and I kind of had like an out-of-body experience. But he was mumbling something. I said, I'm sorry, Bob, you're telling me you, by the way, that was the first question my dad said. I said, call him Mr. De Niro or Bob, because nobody calls him Robert. And he said, ask him if you can call him Bob, which I did. And then, of course, he said, fine. So anyways, I said, Bob, I'm sorry. You were in Pakistan? I'm not following this here. And he said, no, there's a great article about the Hindu Kush, which is a tribe in Pakistan. You should check it out. He goes, just let me sit the words. Just let me know if you can't find it. And in my head, I'm like, hey, Bob, you give me your cell phone. We're going to start hanging out. We're going to start partying together, whatever you need. So he leaves. By the way, kiss my wife on the cheek. She hasn't washed her face since. And him and his manager leave. Literally, I had to drive back to Williamsport. So, boom, I get back in the car. I drive 5 hours back there. I'm telling the whole crew about it, and I get an email, and it just says from RDN's office. That's the subject heading. There's only one RDN. That's got to be Robert De Niro. And it's his assistant saying, hey, Bob, really enjoyed talking to you today. Here's that article that he mentioned. It's about the Hindu Kush, which is a lost tribe in North Pakistan. And she goes, he just wanted you to check it out. And I said, that's pretty incredible that this guy was not only strong enough in the interview, he was, you know, polite, respectful, and all of that, but he actually took an interest in me. And as the three of us know, dealing with athletes who are as narcissistic as they come, whenever anybody actually takes an interest in you, that's awfully special. And when it's Robert De Niro, it blows my mind.
Wow, that's a great story. Great story, Adnan. I love that, and love the fact you were tweeting out De Niro stuff today. Of course, in honor of his birthday, you tweeted out your personal top five, and number one, not to spoil it if you haven't seen it, but it's Raging Bull, which is my favorite too, so congrats. Nice. But speaking of Raging Bulls, I guess not really a great segue, but we're trying to get back into baseball here. And what did you make of this whole Acuna situation with Ureña getting only 6 games for drilling one of the most electrifying young players in the game?
It was wild to see, because I was in studio. We had the Phillies and Red Sox on ESPN's air, and our producer had said, hey, listen, you know, you go live to every one of Acuna's at-bats, because, of course, he's been such a good story, and as you said, he's been so electrifying. And he'd homered in three straight games leading off and five games overall. So the timing never works at this, as you guys know, with television. But it happened to be Matt Vasgersian. There was a crowd at the Red Sox game. He throws it back to me and I said, all right. And literally all I had the time to say was, let's go to Atlanta. Ronald Acuna has hit a home run in three straight leadoff games. Chip Carey with the call, who is the voice of the Braves. And then, boom, Urania plunks in. I'm like, oh, my God. And I was startled to see it. And then you see the bench is obviously casually empty, and Urania gets tossed. Took a few minutes to do that, by the way. I wasn't sure they were going to do that. And we go back, and Rick Sutcliffe is part of our broadcast. And Sud is the Red Baron. He's in his 60s now. He's as old school as it gets. 1984 Cy Young Award winner and a guy who always loved pitching inside and wasn't afraid to throw at a guy. And Sut was the first voice that said, this is outrageous. And he said, my only issue is that they shouldn't have tossed him now. Toss him in the fourth so at least you could have one at-bat and get some vengeance against the guy. And I can't remember the last time, guys, we know how vitriolic people can be, and especially now with sports radio, everyone takes one side or the other. But it was literally a chorus of approval that Urania should be gone for a while, and this was idiotic and barbaric, with the exception of Keith Hernandez, the only guy, the Mets broadcaster, and I loved him as a Met, as a player, as a broadcaster. He's the only guy going, yep, I would have drilled him too. That's what you got to do. And I said, oh, poor Keith. He's the lone wolf on this one. Everybody else says this is terrible. And MLB did not react nearly with the amount of outrage that the rest of us did because the six-game suspension is a joke. And I heard some thought that you suspend him as long as Acuna's out, but thankfully Acuna did play in the next game, so that was all right. But, I mean, if you really want to send a message, guys, you got to go 10, 15, 20 games. I mean, 6 days, you miss one start. There's really no deterrent there. There's no reason Urania wouldn't do that again.
Well, Adnan, you got to hit him in the wallet, right? I mean, and that's the point that you're making. But the problem is, and we always come up against it, is that the players' union is going to dive in because they have equal responsibility to protect the perpetrator because he's one of theirs as they do the victim. And what you'd like to see out of the union more often, I think, is a lean toward the victim's side. One union brother hits another union brother with a 97.5-mile-per-hour projectile.
Yeah.
You land that in the wrong spot, and we're dealing with more than a bruise on an elbow.
And that's an important part of it, because I heard some people say, well, you know, when you drill a guy, you're supposed to drill him in the butt, you know, drill him in the lower half. And it's like, well, what's the difference? And I'm with you. Like, at this point, there just shouldn't be any beating at all. And you're right. If he missed us a little bit, all of a sudden, he could be concussed or worse, and you're suffering major, major, major injuries. So I'm with you that, you've got to hit them where they can. But you're right. The players' union is the ones who are going to push back and say, no, how can you prove intent? And I was actually listening to MLB radio, and Steve Phillips wasn't espousing the theory, but somebody was saying it to Steve that, you know, how do we know Don Mattingly, you know, like a few good men, like Jack Nicholson, maybe he ordered the code red. Mattingly's an 80s baseball player, old school, et cetera. But Mattingly was very clear after the game and emphatic that he told Urania, like, the one thing you don't do is hit him. Like, pitch around him, of course. Pitch inside and back him off the plate. Of course, that's part of baseball strategy. For God's sakes, don't drill the guy. So I was definitely unfortunate, and you're right, 6 inches, a little bit higher, and all of a sudden it could be a really scary situation.
Well, the example I've used, Adnan, and I don't know if you sat down and you would have been part of the broadcast, maybe on the radio side, depending on your schedule Sunday night, but Cubs and Nationals, and look, Urania is not Max Scherzer, so let's throw that out there. But first pitch of the bottom of the first inning, and Anthony Rizzo is leading off for the Cubs, and you know Rizzo. I mean, if he could stand on the plate, he would stand on the plate. Yeah. He does not want to give you the inner half. And so he is up in the batter's box. He's notorious for it. And Max Scherzer went up eye level with a fastball. And he didn't brush him back, but it was a, I'm going to let you know I'm here fastball. I think it was over the plate, inner half. It just looked a lot closer to Rizzo than it would to a lot of other batters because of where Rizzo positions himself in the box. But that's how you approach that. That's Scherzer with command of his fastball saying, don't forget, I'm willing to pitch it here. I think that's how you approach it. The appropriate
way. I know exactly what you're talking about, because I was at the game. We did baseball playing before the game, and I was actually in the press box for it. And it's funny that you mentioned, because immediately that buzz in the press box was like, oh, here we go. Because the whole matchup is Scherzer, who's going to win, I think, his fourth Cy Young Award and his third straight overall, facing the Cubs offense and the Cubs team, which is the best in the National League. And it's like mano a mano. As you said, for people who aren't aware, it's crazy. Rizzo's been hitting leadoff, and it's working right now for that wacky scientist known as Joe Maddon. So Obviously, that's a big game, a moment that's freighted with tension. And you're right, Scherzer is smart about what he's doing, which is that I'm not giving an inch, but you don't have to hit the guy. I mean, it was just... And by the way, if he had just drilled Rizzo the way Urania did to Acuna, then maybe the benches would have emptied right out of the gate. It's all right, this guy's sending a message. But I agree with you. There's an art to it, and the way you do it, and it's all about timing as well. I mean, I once argued with Aaron Boone, who, of course, worked with us on Baseball Tonight, now is the Yankees manager. And I said last year, I just don't understand ever hitting. And Boone said to me, okay, well, hang on. If it's a three-game series, and your guys were hit six times in the first two games, you don't think in that third game you should drill the other team's best player. And I said, I really don't. I don't understand. Like, when you drill a guy, you're just putting another guy on base. And then Aaron said, well, you just don't get it then. Like, if you played baseball and you know it, there's a reason of when to do it. And you honestly should hit guys certain times to protect your players. So I said, okay, be that as it may. And I certainly understood his logic. I get that it's a part of the game. But in this kind of an instance, it's just absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a good plan put in place, Adnan, to actually try and stop this stuff. The best one I've ever heard, Adnan, to the point of your conversation with Aaron Boone, where it only costs a base, you know, to put a guy on and to drill a guy. And we know what the cost can be on the other end, which can be a guy out multiple weeks with an injury like Aaron Judge is right now with the Yankees. Another one of the great players, great young players in the game, hit by pitch. But Dave Hodge had an idea on TS and the Reporters a while back that it ought to be, right out of the gate, two bases for hitting a batter. And that would, you know, put a little more in-game pressure on a team that wants to do that. And might in this day and age of pitching dominance, it might sort of chip away at these pitchers who pitch inside and make them a little more careful, because if it was two bases instead of one base, maybe it would make some kind of a difference. I don't know what you think of that idea.
That's not bad. So two bases, no matter what, if it's hit by pitch, accidents,
yeah.
You can't tell when it's, you can't judge intent.
It's not about intent.
You know what? Yeah, because you can't judge the intent, you can't say, well, that was on purpose, you take an extra base. You just say, no matter what, if you hit a guy two bases, it's actually not a bad idea. I agree with you, especially with the paucity of offense these days. At least it would get the runners running a little bit earlier, another 90 feet, way to go. That's not bad. You know, it's outside the box, definitely, and I'm not surprised that Dave would think about something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the other thing, but Hodge actually debated whether or not the intent needs to be judged. And his point was, hey, even if it is about intent, umpires make judgment calls all the time. Did you intend to swing or not? Did you, you know, I mean, did, you know, balk calls? I mean, you have to judge intent sometimes as an umpire, and why couldn't they?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some point to it. And listen, the bottom line is this. Not one person is happy when they saw Urania suspension. I think even his teammates were probably like, come on, dude, what are you doing? I mean, especially to further the point, it's one thing if it's a rivalry game, right? Like the Sox, Yankees, you go, there's bad blood all the time, and who knows, something dating back to some grudge held years ago, and away we go. The Marlins are like 22 games out. Like, they're a terrible team. Like, why on earth are they trying to take down a Braves team that's battling for first of the Phillies? That's another part of it. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
With Adnan Verk of ESPN, I mean, you, Adnan, are all over all of this. You see a lot of these teams play. Houston has just been crippled by injuries. Now, I guess they're getting George Springer back tonight, and it's a huge three-game set in Oakland, with the Athletics just two games back of the Astros for tops in the AL West, and Oakland is quite a story this year. Oakland's one of those teams that, like, disappears for 7 years, then pops its head above water for a couple, and then goes away again for 7 years. So they're having this little run here now that they do under Billy Bean and company. But with Boston, with Cleveland running away with a terrible division, Houston, Oakland, Seattle, the Yankees could be a 100-win team that has to win a play-in game, and if they do that, then they got to go to Fenway and win a short series against the only team in baseball with a better record than them. As you break the American League down right now, everything being equal, health, all of that stuff, of course, we can't predict that, but let's just pretend, who do you like most?
Boston, to me, is a clear-cut number one. And Alex Cora worked with us at Baseball Tonight. He's a good friend. I'm so pleased for him. He's going to have the best Boston Red Sox team ever. Like, it's ridiculous. After that four-game sweep of the Yankees, again, people try to poke holes. And I heard Mad Dog Russo, who I love, and he's obviously a legendary broadcaster, Mike the Mad Dog, all the rest of it. He said, well, here's the two things. I'll say it like Mad Dog. Here's the two things I don't like. I don't like the bottom third of the order. And, you know, I don't like Kimbrel. And I'm like, hang on a second. If your issue is the bottom third of the order, because he was trying to point out Jackie Bradley Jr. doesn't hit very well, which he doesn't, but he's a tremendous defender. And Sandy Leone, the catcher, I'm like, well, I'll still take two-thirds of a lineup that can absolutely mash. Like, there's no way you're going to stop Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez and Andrew Benintendi and Xander Bogaerts, and their offense just has so much length, which is such a good term for describing the fact that there's just one after another, they come after you in waves. And the starting pitching, Chris Sale could win the Cy Young. Porcello's closer to the Cy Young form he had than a year ago, where he was a disappointment. David Price is fine. I feel like they don't even need him at this point. Nathan Eovaldi's been good. And Kimbrel, I guess Mad Dog's point was he's not the same closer he was 5 years ago, but he's still awfully good. And they don't have a lefty in the bullpen, but who cares, because the righties throw hard enough. So, honestly, Boston, to me, top to bottom, has the fewest number of frailties. You mentioned the Yankees. There's never been in the history of the sport a team that's going to win 100 wins and so many concerns. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. Sanchez has been a mess, and right now he's out. Judge is hurt. The timeline's going to go longer than 3 weeks, which is what Brian Cashman is hoping. And I think most problematic, you don't know who's going to start the wild card game. Severino was brilliant in the first half. He's struggled ever since. Tanaka's good, but he's not great. Sabathia's actually been surprisingly good, but I don't think he's the guy you go to. They could start Jay Happ. Michael Kay, who's the voice of the Yankees, said to me, he thinks Jay Happ, who was, as we know, with the Blue Jays a short time ago, could now all of a sudden be pressed into service against a critical game, which could be at the ODOC toe if the A's end up catching the Yankees for wild card spot. Who knows, maybe the A's could even catch the Astros. The Yankees, there's a lot of concerns. I think Oakland's a tremendous story, and I share your feeling on them that they just kind of rise up out of the dead out of nowhere. But their starting pitching doesn't concern me at all. Trevor Cahill, Sean Manaea are not stars in a one-game playoff. You take their chances. But obviously, Chris Davis slugs a ton of home runs. Matt Chapman's the best third baseman in baseball. Nobody talks about. He's off the charts in defensive runs saved. And they have a great bullpen led by Blake Trinan on the closer. So they're good. Seattle, obviously, listen, they've shown me a little bit something, fellas, because it looked like they're going to do that Seattle swoon, and they've kind of fought back a little bit. Houston, as you mentioned, the injuries, once Altuve was out, Correa was out, Springer's out, they just haven't had their offense right all year. And then Verlander's been a little bit more mortal since the All-Star break. The one we haven't mentioned at all and the one that nobody mentions is Cleveland. And maybe there's a cautionary tale here to watch out for the Indians, because they're in a division where they're not being tested whatsoever. Tito's a great manager. They can coast in September. They've got their stars like Lindor and Ramirez. They have ferocious starting pitching that they've done for a few years now. The bullpen's been awfully wonky, and that's a real legit concern. But maybe you go Red Sox 1 and Cleveland 2, then Houston 3, the Yankees 4, and I would put the A's at 5 and then Mariners at 6.
It's always great to catch up, my friend. Great to hear you're doing so well.
Scott, Dave, really appreciate it, fellas. Be well.
Adnan Virk of ESPN joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.